K-1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Katie Weaver has a report on why climate activists are pushing back against the lifestyles of very rich people. Faith Perlow is here with another everyday grammar lesson. Finally, the Learning English Route 66 trip continues through the state of Arizona. But first,
climate activists have spray-painted a boat, blocked private planes from taking off, and covered holes in golf courses over the summer. These actions are part of a campaign against the lifestyles of very rich people who, the activists say, release a lot of carbon pollution into the atmosphere. As flooding, storms, and wildfires take place around the world, climate activists have also turned to new measures to call attention to these bad weather events. Some activists glued themselves to a road in Germany. Others threw soup on a Vincent van Gogh painting in Britain. They caused delays in sporting events, including a Formula One Grand Prix race car competition and the Tour de France bicycle race. Now they are turning their attention to rich people after targeting oil and gas companies and businesses that invest in fossil fuels. We do not point the finger at the people, but at their lifestyle, the injustice it represents, said Karen Killeen. She was protesting in Ibiza, Spain, a popular summer place for the wealthy. Killeen and other climate activists spray-painted a $300 million boat while holding up a sign that read, "You consume, others suffer." She said she was protesting unnecessary carbon releases, such as super-rich individuals picking up food by boat. "In a climate emergency, it's an atrocity," she said. In Switzerland, about 100 activists chained themselves to aircraft stairs and to an entrance at Europe's biggest private jet sales gathering in Geneva. Another group of activists spray-painted a private jet on the island of Sylt in the North Sea. In Spain, activists plugged holes in golf courses to protest the sport's heavy water needs during hot, dry weather. In the United States, Abigail Disney of the Disney family was arrested at East Hampton Town Airport in New York in July, along with 13 other protesters. They blocked cars from entering or leaving a parking area. The group also protested at a golf course, a museum event, and outside private homes. Luxury practices are disproportionately contributing to the climate crisis at this point, said American University social scientist Dana Fisher. In a 2021 report, the nonprofit organization Oxfam said the richest 1% of people would be responsible for around 16% of emissions by 2030. Richard Wilk is an economic anthropologist at Indiana University. He criticized superyachts, large boats that come with a crew, a helicopter, submarines, and swimming pools. Wilk said superyachts release about 6,400 metric tons of carbon dioxide a year. That is over 1,500 times more than a family car, he said. The environmental group Greenpeace estimated that private aircraft caused about 3 million metric tons of carbon pollution in Europe alone. That is the same as the average yearly CO2 emissions of over 500,000 people in the European Union. But University of Pennsylvania climate scientist Michael Mann warned not to take attention away from fossil fuel companies. The solution is to get everyone to use less carbon-based energy, whether wealthy or lower-income people, he said. David Gitman is president of Monarch Air Group, a private airline in Florida. He urged activists to think about whether their actions would bring real change, like sustainable aviation fuel, like carbon offsets. Gitman added, "Now, if they go out and they spray paint a private jet in an airport in Europe, is that going to get those results? In my opinion, no." But as protests increase, Wilk said, they could still bring changes in behavior. Public shaming is one of the most powerful ways of controlling people, Wilk said. It acts in a lot of different ways to embarrass people, to make them more conscious of the consequences of their actions. I'm Katie Weaver.
Everyday Grammar, we finish our discussion of Fall Out Boy's remake of the song We Didn't Start the Fire, which was written and performed by Billy Joel. The new version of the song lists historical events from 1989 to the present, but the chorus is the same as Billy Joel's 1989 version. Today, we will look at verbal tenses in that part of the song. The fire can be understood as bad things happening in the world. The song is talking about how bad things have existed throughout history, and that one generation is not responsible for all of them. Joel was saying that his generation was doing its best to help by trying to fight the fire. Let's move on to verbal tenses in the chorus. In the chorus, the simple past tense in the negative is used, in the first person plural, or we form. To form the negative simple past, we use subject plus did plus not plus base verb plus the rest of the sentence. In the song, the contraction of did not is used, didn't. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it. Next, we see the past continuous tense in the third person singular form. The past continuous is used to talk about ongoing things that happened in the past. It was always burning. To form the past continuous, we use subject plus past tense form of be, was, or were, plus base verb and present participle, ing ending, plus the rest of the sentence. It was always burning since the world's been turning. In the second half of that sentence, we have a clause starting with since in the present perfect continuous. The present perfect continuous is used to talk about things that started in the past and are continuing today. To form the present perfect continuous, we use subject plus has been or have been plus base verb and present participle, ing ending, plus the rest of the sentence or clause. Since the world has been turning. The contraction form is used in the song. In everyday English, has sometimes appears as apostrophe s. Since the world's been turning. And lastly, we see the present continuous tense used in the second half of the last line of the chorus. It is in the first person plural using we in a contraction with are. No, we didn't light it, but we're trying to fight it. The present continuous tense is used to talk about actions that are happening now, occurring often and may continue into the future. To form the present continuous, we use subject plus be, am, is, are, plus base verb and present participle, ing ending, plus the rest of the sentence. In the final chorus of the song, there is a conditional statement. This is a type 1 or first conditional. This type of conditional is used to talk about future situations that are possible or real. The structure of type 1 conditionals is if or when plus present simple tense verb, will plus infinitive verb. The word gone is a past participle adjective. This sentence means that the world will continue when this generation is no more. In today's everyday grammar, we closely examined other verbal tenses in the chorus of the song, We Didn't Start the Fire. There were the past and present continuous tenses, the present perfect continuous, and the simple past tense. We even talked about first conditional statements. Next time you are listening to a song, try to see which tenses are used, or if there are any conditional statements. I'm Faith Perlow.
Just heard Faith Perlow present this week's Everyday Grammar Story. Faith is here now to talk more about the topic. Hi, Faith. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ashley. This week I wrote about more tenses in the chorus of Fall Out Boy's remake of Billy Joel's song, We Didn't Start the Fire.
There were so many different verb tenses just in that one part of the song. One structure stood out to me, though, the conditional sentence at the end of the song.
Yes, Ashley. But when we are gone, it will still go on.
So tell us about conditionals. You noted that this is a type 1 conditional, and it is used to talk about future situations that are possible or real. What are the other types?
In English, there are 4 main types of conditional statements. If a certain condition is present, then something will happen. That is type 1. Those are for real situations, where there is a great possibility that something will occur.
If I get sick, then I will go to the doctor.
Great example. The second type is for situations that are not real or very unlikely to happen. If I owned a farm, I would have lots of goats and cats. I probably won't have a farm, let alone lots of goats and cats. But it's nice to think about.
The structure for that was the if clause in the simple past tense and the main clause with a modal verb like would or could.
The third type is used to explain that present things would be different if the past had happened differently. The if clause is in the past perfect, and the main clause uses a modal plus have plus the past participle of the verb.
If I had had the time last week, I would have cleaned my house before my mother-in-law came over.
But you didn't have time last week, so your house is a little messy, right?
Sadly, yes.
And lastly, there are 0 conditionals. And they express general truths, using the present tense in both the if clause and the main clause. If you live on the equator, you always have 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of nighttime.
That's an interesting fact, Faith. Well, thanks for giving us a quick introduction to conditionals.
You're welcome, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
In September of 2015, VOA Learning English traveled along the famous Route 66, the 3,900-kilometer-long highway stretches from Chicago, Illinois, to Los Angeles, California. For the next 2 weeks, you will hear our reports from the road. We tell you about the communities, the people, the food, and the special landmarks that make up the highway that's the best. These stories first aired in late 2015.
Arizona's stretch of Route 66 contains some of America's most impressive and famous landscapes. Parts of Arizona's Mother Road wind through the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert National Parks. Red, yellow, orange, and gray earth greets you in the Painted Desert. Eerie fossilized pieces of wood dot the moon-like landscape of the Petrified Forest. The road leading up to the Grand Canyon National Park is just off Route 66. You travel through the Kalibab National Forest where the air smells of fresh pine. Deer and elk sightings along the way are common. But beyond the scenery, Arizona's Route 66 offers Old West experiences, ghost towns, and legendary ghost stories.
Arizona's nickname may be the Grand Canyon State. But with so many ghost stories along Route 66, it could also be called the Haunted State. One of those ghost stories takes place at the historic Weatherford Hotel in Flagstaff, Arizona. The Weatherford Hotel has been around since 1897. A Texan named John Weatherford built the hotel after falling in love with the town and surrounding mountains. It was a grand hotel. The city's local newspaper at the time declared, "There is no finer hotel in the whole Southwest." An elegant balcony wraps around the hotel's second floor, offering views of the city and nearby San Francisco peaks. Many famous Americans have stayed at the Weatherford, including former President Theodore Roosevelt and newspaper publisher William Randolph Hearst. And, as the story goes, some visitors never left. Weatherford legend includes the ghost of a broken-hearted bride. She is reportedly seen most often in the hotel's ballroom on the second floor. Over the years, many guests and hotel workers have claimed to hear or see her, and other ghosts, in the night. Manny Martinez is the manager at the Weatherford. He says he has heard all about ghostly sightings from his guests and employees.
There's been all kinds of different stories about it. Like I said, mainly weird things with the lights, with the noises. You know, it's an old building as well. But there are some stories that I kind of do believe, because you do get an eerie feeling, especially working upstairs at that bar. You know, it's 2 in the morning, you're by yourself, closing it down. So, like I say, you kind of get that feeling like somebody's watching you.
The broken-hearted bride reportedly stayed in hotel room 54. These days, the room is used as a closet. Martinez explains that several workers have reported mysterious events.
This is room 54. We turned into a maid's closet now. As you can tell, the door kind of sounds a little creepy as it opens up. But this is where an employee of mine came up here once. He came up here, opened the door, and he saw a picture of something, a silhouette of somebody. Turned on the light, turned back around to where he was looking. There was nothing there. But this is where my mates as well said that, you know, they found a lot of weird things. The sheets kind of, you know, looked like they were burnt and stuff. The room by itself, it's kind of scary, kind of creepy.
Another of Flagstaff's spooky stories took place at an old honky-tonk called the Museum Club. Its former owners are said to haunt the place to this day. Their lives ended tragically inside the club. In 1973, Don Scott and his wife Thora owned the business. They lived on the second floor. One late night, Thora Scott fell down the stairs and broke her neck. She died a few weeks later. Her husband never recovered, and his business suffered as well. Don Scott shot and killed himself at the club 2 years later. Riley Helsper works at the Museum Club. She says there are reports of sightings of Don and Thora's ghosts. She is often seen at the back bar, Helsper said. They both hang out. Don's not exactly a friendly character, but Thora's a sweetheart.
West of Flagstaff, Route 66 leaves behind the pine trees and cool air for much warmer climates. It winds through Crozier Canyon with its beautiful reddish-brown hills piled with boulders. Some rocks seem in position to roll down the hills at the lightest gust of wind. the town of Seligman marks the beginning of the longest remaining uninterrupted stretch of Route 66. The road extends unbroken for over 250 kilometers until the Colorado River divides Arizona and California. Along the way is the desert city of Kingman. In the 1940s, the town became a popular spot to film Old West gunfighter movies. As a result, many movie stars spent time in the area, including Marilyn Monroe and Clark Gable. From Kingman, Route 66 runs through narrow roads in the mountainous desert until it reaches the Old West outpost of Oatman.
Oatman, Arizona was once a ghost town, a town abandoned by its residents, often because economic activity that supported it has failed or ended. But tourism has revived Oatman's economy. Arriving in Oatman is like returning to the American West of 150 years ago. The storefronts and other businesses look just as they did decades ago. Wild burros roam the streets among the tourists. These days, burros far outnumber Oatman residents. Tourists here come to see the donkeys and the Old West Outlaws. Actors put on a fake gunfight show 2 times every day. The show takes place in front of the Oatman Hotel. The actors who play the gunfighters live in Oatman.
My name's Yosemite. You call me John George when I'm in trouble, but Yosemite.
And what about you?
Call me Dusty.
What about when you're in trouble, Dusty? What do they call you?
Gone.
People line both sides of the street to watch them perform. They rob the Oatman Hotel and then argue about who should hold on to the big bag of money. They decide to settle the dispute the old-fashioned way, with their guns. Of course, they shoot blanks, not bullets. Yosemite describes the shows more colorfully.
Yeah, we do gunfights 2 times a day, 12 o'clock high noon and 2:15, if there's any targets left. So if you show up, bring a carload of them, we're more likely to give you a free ticket. That's the driver gets out free.
The show is free, and the two men are volunteers. But they do pass their hats asking for donations. All the money the crowd donates goes to a medical center that treats child burn victims. Oatman is just a few kilometers from Arizona's border with California, the final state on the Mother Road journey. Leaving behind the beauty of Arizona is not easy, but its spirit and spirits will stay with visitors long after they leave. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. Join us next week as we cross the state of California and reach the Pacific Ocean. That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.